For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with a new decade, a new year and a new episode covering the very best in non-league football. And on such a momentous occasion, I couldn't, of course, do it alone. So alongside me, the man who is to non-league management what Father Time is to New Year's Eve. He needs no introduction, so I will just say welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Yes, happy new year to yourself and the listeners and the tweeters and the rest of the guys out there.
You sound a little bit subdued for 2020, Mr. Anderson.
I have proper enjoyed myself this Christmas, you know, but I went to Wilson Slough yesterday, which was and I watched it from kick-off to final whistle. I didn't miss a ball being kicked. Excellent football match, like real good standard, real good game, good atmosphere, real magnificent advert for the level. And then afterwards, normally it's Dean Brennan's fault I end up drunk, but I can't even blame Dean. I've gone in after the bar just quickly, and there was several generations of non-league footballers in there. There was like Christian Metcalf, who you'd remember from Hayes, Tim, Nathan Bonds, who played in very successful Hayes side as well.
I'd remember Nathan from Hayes, but I don't know whether Nathan remember playing for Hayes.
Yeah, because he went to Steve, and he always remembered a magnificent scar, chainsaw, because he was like a tree surgeon. So anyway, he was there. Then there was Robbie Johnson, who had played at Slough, and Horrorborough, Ray Duffy, who obviously have Hamwell and managed Hamwell, but played for Slough, Harrow, Hubby, Lawrence Holmes, who had played at Harrow, going back another generation nearly. All just happened to be there, and we don't see each other an awful lot, but I can assure you that the shares in Guinness have gone up this morning because I think I drank a swimming pool full of it. So, yes, I am a little bit subdued and I will try my very best, and I can only apologise.
Well, it must be nice to have had a Christmas off without the worries of who ate too many mince pies. One of the ones I heard this. The missus has booked a surprise holiday. And all those people who, like, you didn't stick to the soft drinks. None of those headaches this Christmas.
No, none of those. And we were just talking, the guys were talking about the difference in footballers today and their dedication and application, you know, certainly it's of a different generation. So we weren't sort of slaughtering ourselves from being from another generation. But, you know, listen, everybody thinks that your generation's the best fun. And I certainly had fun yesterday with him. And then I managed to get to see, I shook hands with John Underwood because I'm hopefully going to see him Saturday with Neil to do the gaffer tapes. But had a quick chat with Dean Brennan and the staff, and just a real good game, really good football match, you know. And I was with a couple of people watching it, and I said to them, "Why would you pay into a Premier League game when you've got this? You know, proper still people still tackling non-league, and you know, it's a physical contest." And it was it was really good, close game, but yeah, good win for Wilson.
And you're talking about the tackles and the action rather than the computerised decision from a bloke sat in an office in Stockley Park.
Yeah, absolutely. by 8 o'clock, I couldn't say VAR, let me tell you. But it was... I thought the referee did okay. It was funny, I was looking back, you know, you sort of think about these decisions. Made a couple of ones, you're not sure about this one, not sure about that one, but that's just me generally, isn't it? But, no, go and spend your money. Go and pick a non-league game and do what I did yesterday. Watch the game and the commitment and the quality of the football was really, really good, you know.
And the dedication off the field as well, because I know there's lots of people behind the scenes at Wealdstone that make sure that game gets put on and run smoothly.
Unbelievable, yeah. It's a well-oiled machine there now. I've been a couple of times. Got to meet the chairman yesterday for the first time, Rory, who indeed has said he'll come on and do the show. At some stage, I'm sure that'll interest non-league fans, but Wilson fans in general. I was really impressed, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to Slough Saturday, who are, I think they might be third or fourth, but they're in and around the top six. Just because I ain't been to the new ground, so I'm looking forward to that, but... it always amazes me that non-league survives. And at this time of year, you know, although the weather's been quite mild, but when you go to something, it's uplifting because it's not only surviving, it's alive and kicking, you know.
It's certainly a religion for some.
More so than I am tonight, it would have to be said.
And so for our first guest, it is of course the weekend that the majority of the world seem to believe the FA Cup gets underway. More of the third round proper later in the show, but first up, a celebration of the non-league participation and injection of FA Cup magic into this season's competition. While some slumbered over the Christmas period, others fawned over the success of their club in this season's FA Cup and got voting in the factors. Some of us even found ourselves in deep personal deliberation as we consider the teams that deserve recognition in this season's FA Cup Team Awards. Whilst partying to excess kept some awake into the new year, others couldn't sleep for the excitement over what are possibly the first big awards of the new year. Step forward, our very own FA Cup Stato extraordinaire and the man behind all the tireless work that brings together the results of the factors. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Phil Annetts at FA Cup Factfile.
Hello, guys. Happy New Year to you both.
Happy New Year, sir.
Yeah, sir, and to you.
So before we begin this Oscar-like announcement, Phil, can you give us a quick overview of what the factors are and how these votes have been cast?
Yeah, happy to do that. Yes, very much so. Well, the factors, they are the only award to recognise non-league club performances in the FA Cup. And over the festive period, thousands of non-league fans have got involved with the factors this year, both during the nomination process before Christmas and in the voting section that we've been going through the last few days. All very highly contested and tight categories, where any one of those clubs that in each of the factor categories would actually be worthy winners. They all produce fantastic achievements throughout the competition. The winners, they've been determined by a combination of a public vote, which has happened via Twitter polls and email and Facebook and stopping me in the street sometimes, and an independent panel of non-league and FA Cup experts. Sometimes the two groups.
And then us? Is there FA Cup experts well, and then our group? Yeah.
I think sometimes the groups were aligned, so the panel and the public were aligned, but on other awards, there was definitely a difference of opinion and one side has swung it in the end. But before we get into the actual results, I would really like to thank everyone who has taken the time to get involved, all those non-league fans, and to each of you guys who have helped bring a new dimension to the overall competition. So you, Dave, you, Tim, and not forgetting Matt and Caroline as well. It's been a really interesting and exciting competition this year.
And a good response, Phil?
Very good, yeah. Thousands have responded. I don't know where that compares to previous years, but it feels like there's more momentum on it this year.
So, Phil, people have voted. They've cast their votes. Have you spent the night hiding away and making sure that people aren't peering over your shoulder as you're counting these votes?
Yes, I've counted them all in and I've counted them all out again. Double check. Got other people who aren't even interested in FA Cup check. So hopefully we've got clarity on who are the four winners of each of the factor awards.
So we've got four awards. Shall we start with the one that had more nominees? Eight nominees in this one, I believe. The performance of the FA Cup factor. Do you want to run through the nominees and then tell us the winner?
Yes, I can do that. Yes. So this is always the most hotly contested award, usually because there are eight worthy winners within a nominee. So it's very difficult to choose, as you probably found out.
The eight that were up
were Carl Shorten Athletic for their 2-1 win over high level Dagenham and Redbridge. Then there's Kingstonian, who can forget their great 4-0 win at Macclesfield Town in the first round. Lesser known maybe from the wider public was Longridge Town. They were nominated for winning their first ever FA Cup match in their history, and they won it 6-1, which is a great introduction to the competition. Then there's Maldon and Tiptree, who we all know had a fantastic 2-1 win at EFL2 Leighton Orient. And then the other half of the voting went Melton Town. They were playing in their very first game up against Worksop and managed to turn it around 2-1 in the last 2 minutes after being 1-0 down. Then we had Sutton Athletic, another FA Cup debutant, who had a cup set over Ashford Town of Middlesex and had beaten 6-0. Wickham in the extra premier round had the highest victory in the overall competition. They won 10-1 at Harrogate Railway Athletic. And last but not least was Whitby Bay, who had a 3-1 cup set win at Gloucester City in a replay, where they only had, I think, 14 men that travelled to that match, and three of them were goalkeepers. So a very commendable victory there. So they were the eight nominees. Sorry. So we do have a winner, of course.
Yeah.
In this category, the public vote and the panel, I think we were quite aligned, and the winner of the performance of the cup factor goes to Maldon and Tiptree for that fantastic victory at Leighton Orient. And who can forget that wonderful winning goal?
And I won't say that it was a jammy win.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think I sweared that way myself. I just thought it was an unbelievable... Listen, they're all magnificent achievements, and it's only when it's put in front of you, Phil, you realise how difficult it is to try and balance how weird to select our sort of contribution, if you know what I mean, the percentages. But yeah. But for me, that was just the one that I remember. I think I was aware of them because they'd knocked Chertsey out and beat them something like 6-0 or 6-1 or something like that. So I became aware of them from then and followed it. But to go to Orient and win, especially away from home, is just a special achievement.
And they've gone on to carry that form into the league as well. Yeah. 13 wins out of 12, I think, so far. A big game for them at the weekend, actually. They're first against second, playing at Averley at the weekend as well. So I don't know if that's a game you can hit down to and deliver this prize at, Phil. But
possibly not. I'd like to be able to, but I think I'm already booked up this weekend. FA Cup and action, etc. Still goes on for some of us.
It does, and we'll come to that later. So so that's the performance of the FA Cup and a well-deserved award there. Next one, the Special Team Award. Four nominees in this one.
Yes, the Special Team Award factor. It runs slightly differently to the other awards because it's all about recognising something the clubs have done out of the ordinary, something special that's outside of maybe just footballing performance on its own. So we had four nominees for this award. Boston United were up there for, they had four consecutive away wins and absolutely fantastic, terrific support in their final home game at York Street in the FA Cup. And so that they were nominated for that achievement. Secondly, we had Chichester City. If you remember, they got a bye in the first round. Obviously, great celebrations, got some great prize money, and they have committed to donating some of that prize money to help out future Bury FC, whatever that might look like. The third club was Dunstan. Dunstan were nominated for their outstanding on-field performances, 21 goals in total on their run to the Q3 round. And then we had, finally, strangely, a combined nomination of Haringey Borough and Yeovil Town for their solidarity in opposing racism. If you remember, they both decided to walk off the pitch when there was trouble in the crowd in that condition. So that was also recognised. So they're the nominations.
Nominations, which must mean that there's a winner at the end of it.
This was quite tight indeed. At the end, I think the public vote just swung it. They were slightly in favour of this team than the panel were. And the award, the Special Team Award, is given to Chichester City for their wonderful commitment to passing on some of their much-needed prize money and helping out a fellow club.
I think they did non-league proud as well in just the way they conducted themselves. They were excited. Yeah. They weren't bragging about it. It was a great story about the magic of the FA Cup, that you could be that very last ball out of the bag for the draw, and in the year that there was a bye, it had everything, I think.
Yeah, very tense and very exciting, and emotions boiled over. But they've done a grand gesture there, and I think that's very commendable. To considering the money, what they could do with the money themselves. It's a great touch to pass it on to another club.
Yeah, and I think that their recent history probably played a part in that as well, because we've probably heard the tale since some people were aware before of their plight in 2.5 years ago as to whether they would still be in existence, and it just shows how much the FA Cup can have an impact on a club, and hopefully they'll go from strength to strength as well. And I do know that they were also nominated in the next factor as well. There's the surprise of the FA Cup. There are four nominees here, Phil.
Yeah, so the surprise of the FA Cup factor, that's awarded to the non-league club who produced an unexpected result or went on an out-of-the-blue cup run. So we've got a mixture of those combinations in the four nominees. First up is Abbey Rangers. For them, they won four FA Cup ties this season after previously never ever having won an FA Cup tie in the history of the competition. So that was quite a new run for them and a very, very unexpected. Secondly, we have Chichester City, as you mentioned. They were nominated for going five rounds further all the way to round two than they've done since they merged together with Portfield back in 2000. So, you know, that five extra rounds is quite a surprising cut run. Third up was Colne FC for becoming the first club from the Lancashire town ever to reach the fourth qualifying round, despite there being many clubs from the area who have taken part in the FA Cup in the past. And finally, we have Walthamstow. They were nominated for producing two successive cup sets. The second one, I think, against Aylesbury United was quite a significant dominant victory. So they were put forward for that and wonderful performances.
So four nominees, one winner.
Yeah, this is really, really tight. And the winner really has just edged it over the other three. And for the surprise of the FA Cup factor, the actual award goes to Chichester City for their second award of this year's factors. Wow.
It's not a bad year to be involved with Chichester City, is it?
No,
it's very good. I mean, it's well deserved. All of them were well deserved. But I think, you know, Chichester City, you know, go five rounds further than you've ever been before. That's some feat. Something that should be recognised.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the fact that if you've made the shortlist, you recognise it as well, because it, as I say, judging it was very, very difficult. And, you know, the fact that there was four teams or eight teams, would depend on what category, but that's recognition in itself. But for Chichester, it's been an excellent FA Cup.
With Chichester City, taking these awards, the chap that won the lottery win as well didn't live too far away, does it? I'm thinking of looking at houses in the local area.
There's definitely something in the water you need to go
with. It's probably flown away in the water since. So that leaves us with just one factor left, that the team of the FA Cup, again, four nominees, Phil.
Yeah, so the team in the FA Cup factor, this is the big one. It's been won by teams like Didcot Town, Hereford, Stourbridge and Dunstan in the past, and is awarded to the non-league club which has probably had the biggest impact on this season's FA Cup. And the four nominees, we've got AFC Fylde, who of course are still in the competition. They were nominated for reaching the third round of the competition for the very first time in what is just their 12th campaign. Secondly, we've got Chichester City again, the first club in 70 years to go from the extra premier round all the way through to the second round, which is a fantastic achievement. Third up is Maldon and Tiptree. They've reached the second round for the first time in their history, which is three rounds further than they've ever gone before. And fourth up was Royston Town. They set their best ever FA Cup run to the fourth qualifying round in what is their 42nd campaign. So four great nominees, all worthy of being known as team of the FA Cup from the non-league perspective.
Yeah, and as you say, this being the big one, this really was a difficult one to choose. But I guess, I say that, I guess there must be one winner. I don't know. What can you tell us, Phil? The team of the FA Cup factor, who does that go to?
Yeah, so the team of the FA Cup factor, well, this was in fact a unanimous decision between both the panel group and the public vote. Good. And both parties ended up voting for Maldon and Tiptree to be known as the team of the FA Cup
2019-20. Yeah,
I'm thinking of other. That's one that they'll preserve forever.
Yeah, the fact that we actually got some for the public to agree with us is main problem. But
for the fans, by the fans,
absolutely, maybe. Yeah. But I would say absolutely the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, they've really made a mark on the competition this year. Everyone stood up and took notice of them. You know, the others have had some fantastic achievements as well, not to be knocking them, just because they haven't won. But, yeah, the Maldon Tiptree is just a great story.
Yeah, and as I say, you know, every one of the achievements is brilliant, but that's the one that sort of stood out for me as well. And I'm sure they'll be delighted.
I'm sure they will be delighted. I'm sure you'll be making the necessary arrangements to visit them and make sure that they put these awards up on their wall.
Yeah, we had some great times presenting last year's awards to the four winners, and I know they were all pleased to get the recognition and have it formally presented to them. So hopefully we can do that again this year.
Yeah. So that's the factors then, Phil. But of course, you know, as you mentioned, you've got AFC Fylde still in there and Hartlepool United as well, two non-league sides still in the competition. The draw's not been overly kind to them, but always a chance of a cup set. Are you off to either of those games this weekend, Phil?
No, I can't make it to Sheffield. I was thinking about going to Oxford because it is on my doorstep, but other commitments have meant that I'm not going to be able to get to a game at all this weekend. Oh. I just have to watch it on the TV like the most other of us. But interestingly, Fylde, obviously, they've made it to the third round for the first time ever. They've drawn a Premier League team away, so they couldn't really ask for much more than that. Already history makers, so whatever happens, they can go there and just, you know, play to for fun almost. There's nothing to lose. Hartlepool, a bit different, obviously, they're a former league team. But interestingly, their best FA Cup run is only to the fourth round, even though they've been a league team for most of the 100 years, 102 years of existence. They've never gone beyond the fourth round. So, you know, if they make it to the fourth round this time, that means they're equal their best ever run, but they started from a round earlier than they would normally have done in the past.
No, but they'll be looking for you to re-look at the factors if that occurs.
I think we've actually got
the factors are done.
We're actually going to speak to their manager in a little bit, Phil, so we'll be telling them about your facts.
Well, Phil, I've got to say thanks once again for all of your input this season with the FA Cup and on the show.
I've just sort of noticed something. Maldon and Tiptree won two awards and Chichester won two awards. Is Phil trying to cut back on the petrol, you know, for the awards? So give two to each team, so it saves you two trips, Phil. You know, I'm just asking the question, you know.
Yeah, that makes life a whole lot easier for me. Well, no, I could have done with more local clubs up for awards. That would have been
No, I only jest. I only jest. I'm sorry.
It is a little bit of fun, but it is... the recognition that the non-league clubs deserve for the input that they do for the FA Cup, because as much as I joked at the start of the this piece about, you know, rest of the world thinking that the FA Cup begins at this stage, the FA Cup wouldn't be the FA Cup if it wasn't for all these other bits that have come before and the, you know, the wins, the runs, the trips with three goalkeepers and a lack of subs. They're the stories of the FA Cup, and that's why we love it. And it's certainly why Phil loves it, and it gives all his commitment, dedication, insight, knowledge. I'm sure at some point one of these answers or one of these facts is going to come up in a pub quiz that I'm at, and I'll then have to I'll have to honour Mr. Phil Annetts and admit where I got my information from. You can, of course, be very proud of everything you've done, Phil, and we certainly are very grateful for everything you've done. No doubt we will speak to you soon and keep an eye on that WordPress site and your Twitter account. Do you want to remind everybody about them?
Yeah, of course. You can follow me for all facts on the FA Cup throughout the whole competition from August to the final at FA Cup Fact File on Twitter. I run a blog on WordPress, facupfactfile.com, and I've also got a Facebook account which you can find me under FA Cup Fact File. So do follow any of those. It'd be fantastic. to have you on board.
So let's talk to a manager setting his side up for one of those FA Cup third round ties this weekend. In just it's just under 2 months since we last spoke with him, when news had broken he was to become the new manager at his now club, but he hadn't taken the role on officially due to various bits of red tape that hadn't been sorted out. Ironically, that was days before my own club, Hazen Yeddy United, took on Oxford United in the FA Cup, and now he's fully in charge at his club, Hartlepool United, and setting his side up to face Oxford United as well. It could have been me. He could have been coming here this weekend, but alas, it's a happy new year and a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to Dave Challoner, manager at Hartlepool United.
Hi, fellas, how are you? I prefer to be coming to you, to be honest, than going Oxford, I've got to be honest.
I said I could share some of the videos with you, but yeah. It's probably not where you want to be watching. I'll start with another coincidence. I can't let it go without comment, because listeners will know you started the season that as he filed, and that was the red tape that stopped you taking charge in the FA Cup first round tie earlier on the season. We're in the third round now, and there are only two non-league clubs remaining. Your current one, Hartlepool United, and your former club, AFC Fylde. Now, have you yet had that dream where both sides wow. get a cup set this weekend, draw each other in the fourth round, and suddenly this year becomes the Dave Challoner FA Cup?
I'd be gutted if we got through and drew them in the fourth round, I've got to be honest. Oxford away was bad enough. To get through again and not get a big one would be I suppose the worst case scenario. But I still have I've got really fond memories of being there, and they obviously got a big tie going to Sheffield United, and we both faced really, really tough asks. So if one of us tend to get through, I hope it's obviously hope it does. But it's going to be tough for both sides, I'm sure.
Yeah, the draw's not really been kind, but I mean, it's not really throughout the competition. He had a great replay win in that last round to put Exeter City out. Oxford United, a slightly different proposition, another step higher, also doing really well in their division. But do you pull upon the psychology of that last round win to help you through and build the lads up for this game?
I think you've got to pull on whatever you can. Listen, we know that if we're going to go and play against League One clubs over the course of a season, that we wouldn't be able to compete. But in a one-off game, we obviously have a chance. I think probably for us it may be a little bit of a benefit. Probably that it doesn't sound that Oxford are doing well, and they've obviously lost on Saturday, the first time in a long time, and they've got a big game the following weekend against one of their promotion rivals, if you like. So whether they'll make changes or not, I'm not too sure. But we know that on the day, we've got to have seven or eight of our lads have their best games, or have really good games, and probably a few of their lads have got to be a little bit off it. And if that happens, then I suppose the way the FA Cup is, anything can happen, and we've got more than an equal chance of going there or winning. That's the mindset we have to have.
Yeah, it's that's the magic dust of the FA Cup, Dave. You know, but for me, you're sort of getting prepared for a tough game. You've had a tough Christmas, haven't you? You know, like Barrow, Harrogate twice. You know, but teams who are obviously well little Derby plus like being up and around you. You know, being up at the top of the table. Sorry. So that how have you come through that injury wise, fatigue wise? Because that's always important as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always tough this time of the year. I think, listen, the game on Boxing Day, we weren't at it. We were poor and deservedly lost. The game on New Year's Day was a typical New Year's Day game. It was a really, really poor game between two sides that looked tired. We didn't take our chance when it came, and a minute later they took their chance when it came, and that was the way the game was decided. It is tough. I'm not going to hide behind it. We've obviously got lads who have played in all three of those games. We'll play on Saturday, and then we've got a league game Tuesday, and we go away to Dover and away to Yeovil. So we've got a tough January, but we know that it's an opportunity for us to set ourselves up for that back end of the season. So it is tough, but listen, we wouldn't change it. We'd much rather be in the competition and have an opportunity to go and play a League One team that are flying. And as much as It's a tough ask. We all want these opportunities to test ourselves against higher division teams and football league teams and football league players, the players themselves, myself as a manager, and our club. So we're looking forward to it. We'll go and embrace whatever it brings, and give us our best shot of trying to progress.
Yeah, and to be fair, Dave, it's an away day for you. It's away from the cold face of league games in the nice snow, which are like. Just everyone's a tough game. No matter what manager we speak to at that level, from top to bottom, they all say, in all honesty, you can win or lose every game you play in it. So to get away from the burden of pressure realistically isn't with you, is it? So it's a different sort of feel.
It is almost a free hit for us in terms of going there and, like you say, enjoying the occasion. Big carrot at the end of it. We naturally have to make some changes because we've got some lads who are on loan that are cup tied, so other lads will get an opportunity, and it's a great chance for them to, I suppose, the lads who haven't been in the team in the last couple of weeks to go and state their claim. So we should have at least a couple out there that have got everything to prove. And it's a great place to go. Hopefully there's a decent crowd there, a good atmosphere, wide open spaces. Carl spoke a lot about and I've noticed that when we watch games, the size of the pitch. The pitch is a huge pitch, so it'll be good. It'll be a real good marker as to where we're at, and a real good marker to the players individually that if they aspire to be League One footballers, where they need to be.
And January brings up another thing of will you be adding to your squad?
We'll try to. I think we're not embargoed by a transfer window, but obviously other clubs aren't willing to let out because they know they can't bring in. So, we will. I think we've got to have a short-term view on things and what we need to try and get us in that mix. Probably a little bit of a medium-term view. We've a pretty blank canvas in the summer, to be honest. There's a lot of players out of contract and we need to have a little eye on that and where we're gonna go. So I suppose recruitment wise, it's a bit of both. It's a bit now what we could do with now, what will help us, and also looking a bit further ahead.
Yeah, and that's the playing side of thing. And when we spoke last time, you were saying you were going to bring in Joe Parkinson as your assistant, which you have done, and keeping Anthony Sweeney there, a Hartlepool legend, who was the previous caretaker manager. How important has it been to have those two vital parts of the jigsaw, insight of the club, insight of how you work, so that you can hit the ground running at your new club there?
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, that's the big part. I've said it before, as much as I suppose I'm the sort of forefront in terms of being the manager. I think your management team and what you're having around you is massively important. And it's, I suppose, equivalent to what a squad may be, and what players you need, not just to start 11. I'm exactly the same. I'll bounce ideas off them. We'll challenge each other. And that's the big thing, because we're still, a young group as a management group. To have the insight, like say, of Sweeney's knowing the club, it has been, like say, massively helpful. Joe is a really good coach. He's obviously played at the highest level. He's great around the lads. He's really knowledgeable, and it'll be a good group, and still will continue to hopefully get better. And anything we add to it will. Hopefully, like I say, continue to improve us. That's the plan.
Well, the last one for me is, and I'm no mathematician, but 36 points you've got. If you get to 43, you're in the playoffs. And if you drop 6, you're in the relegation zone. So it's quite a tight division, isn't it?
It's a nuts division. And as you said there, every game is... anyone can win it. And that's why... People may think at the start of the season you're being a little bit clever or a little bit sort of pessimistic around the nature of the league. You've got to get to 50 points as quickly as you can. I don't care if you're thinking you're going to be one of the throated teams up there. The way it works, the proof's there that teams that have been in the playoffs one year, the following year have got relegated. And that is the nature of it. So you need to get to 50 points as quickly as you can. Hopefully, at that point, you give yourself enough games towards the back end of the season to get in the playoffs. If you get to 50 points by Christmas, as the top sides are, then you obviously can reevaluate where you are and have a push for the top spot. But again, even then, although Barrow on a great run, and we played them between, Christmas and New Year. And
yeah, true with them.
2-2 was a good result. We probably, if we're honest, we should have won the game. And nothing against them. They're deservedly top. We conceded two poor goals from the defensive and a goalkeeping mistake. And that's how the league is. It's really, really tight. And whoever's the most consistent over the course of the 46 games will be the ones who get promoted.
Yeah, you mentioned last time that the club were very patient with you in the appointment, and that you've also mentioned Anthony Sweeney there and his knowledge of the club. How have the fans been with you? Have they taken to you and embraced you, and what their expectations? Because they've had such a bad run in recent years, and then new ownership coming in, and suddenly as a fan, your expectation goes through the roof. And it as Dave said, it's such a tight division. Are they being patient with you and getting behind you and embracing the new regime?
Yeah, the fans have been amazing. And that in all honesty, even as a new Hartlepool fan, if you like, and myself, is the biggest disappointment when we lose games or when we haven't performed, is the fact that you're letting more people down. But they're very realistic as to where we are and what we're looking to do. I think as football fans, they don't ask for a great deal. They ask for lads to give everything they've got, which is a minimum that you'd expect. And they've had, they've had the rough side of things over the past few years. And it may be, a little bit of a process that we need to go through. But my job is ultimately to get them a team that they relate to and they can be proud of. And I'll do everything I can to do that. In the meantime, what we've got to try and do is pick up results and hopefully give ourselves a shot this season at having some exciting games towards the back end of the season, and give the fans that are turning up and following us. We took 1,000 to Harrogate on Boxing Day, which was, again, amazing. Sold out in 2 days. We'll have had over 3,500 there over Christmas. So the place is made, certainly, into a fan base and an infrastructure to be successful and move forward. And we've got to do everything we can to make that reality for them.
And how many Gundy Oxford, Dave?
I'm not too sure. I think it's, listen, we normally will travel in our numbers. The away fans are brilliant. That was one of the big pulls for me, to be fair. I went before I'd taken the job into Notts County, and we took 800 to Notts County. The atmosphere was bouncing. Yeah. So the support we have on the road is amazing. And I'm sure, again, regardless, they'll enjoy the day out. But for us as a group, what we want to do is give them something to go on with. Hopefully that'll be the case.
Yeah. While I've got you on, Dave, a couple of other things I wanted to ask you, unrelated really to the FA Cup, but of course we're in a new decade, and I don't know if you're on social media, there's been people posting pictures of how they've changed in the last 10 years. I think it's probably 10 years since we first spoke to you when you were at Colwyn Bay, back in the BBC days, and you've obviously managed at Colwyn, you've managed at Fylde, now at Hartlepool, all very different clubs. But for you, how do you think management's changed in the last 10 years?
I've just come into it at the time, probably when it was changing. And I think you guys all know football as well as I do. From when I was a player, it was a whole lot different. And the man management side of thing nowadays is a lot different to what probably I had to deal with, or certainly what I thought I was like as a player. I think that can be tough. Players are probably different characters, different animals than they were 10, 15 years ago. But that's something that I think as someone involved in the role, you have to adapt to, whether you like it or not. It's ultimately the game and society moving forward. I think I'm very aware and probably realise how fortunate I am that I've come from a club where we were a real, real non-league club, and it was all part-time and all volunteers. Came through that stage in it with Fylde and went through a development into a professional outfit, and now I've come to a club that have come the other way, really, and been up in League One and still have that infrastructure in place. So all the experiences and things that you come across hopefully set you up for set you up to go to a place where you think nothing can ever surprise you. That'll never be the case, but I think you're certainly more equipped to deal with things.
Yeah, well, the players have certainly changed, because I haven't seen anybody take a decent throw in this season. So
don't talk to me. Terrible, honestly. You've not watched our games over Christmas, have you? Oh, dear.
I saw some chap on LinkedIn who was specialising in specialist coaching for your position. And I was thinking, imagine the videos that you could create on throw-ins, Dave.
I've missed the trick, definitely. I know Liverpool employed a throw-in coach, didn't they? I definitely missed the trick. I imagine a whole lot more better paid and a lot less pressure.
Stress.
That was another thing. Obviously, your physiotherapy training, do you get to use that now, or do you leave that to the people that have got a bigger bag?
I don't really use it. I think I'm maybe just a shadow hanging over our physio and stuff. That, you know, if they say something I don't agree with, I think I've got more knowledge than what they have, and will throw my two pennies in. And I probably, again, behind closed doors, they're telling me to shut my mouth. So yeah. I try to stay out of it as best as possible.
There's probably not too many that turn up to training with a dodgy hamstring. Though,
yeah, they know, yeah.
They'll try anything, won't they? Again, I think what he is, he can talk in... My wife always said to me when I was doing my physio degree, you've got a degree in long words. What he can do, he can talk in long words to me, and I'll understand some of what he's talking about, whereas the rest of the coaching staff are just saying, what? If he's got a sore calf, tell me he's got a sore calf.
Yeah, very good.
Dave, always a pleasure to have you on. Dave, best of luck for the weekend.
Dave,
cheers, fellas.
We'll wish you a minimum of 5 wins for the rest of the year, okay? So get your 5 wins, get your 50 points, and happy new year, mate.
Hopefully by the end of January, fingers crossed, give ourselves a chance.
Yeah. Good luck.
Cheers, fellas.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt, and happy new year.
Happy new year, Tim.
It's a new year anyway. How happy are we?
New year, new me. New year, new me.
But we love the old you, Matt. That's the problem.
Well, it'll probably stick around, so I wouldn't worry too much.
all those promises so easily broken.
No, they've already gone out the window. Yeah, they've already gone out the window.
That was some of those promises that we'd have a bumper non-league new year. It seems to be a lot of football played over the festive period, but... and not all at the weekends either. So that meant that you didn't have as much to report about in last weekend's paper. But there haven't really been that many big stories, have there? The tables seem relatively similar to what they were back in mid-December. I guess the main thing to talk about, there have been a few managerial casualties with some big names at that. I mean, let's start with Dagenham and Redbridge and the departure of Peter Taylor after Boxing Day.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of been in a little bit of free fall recent weeks, Dagenham, haven't they? And you kind of don't like seeing managers lose their jobs or lose their jobs, but you could sort of maybe see something wasn't quite going quite for them. I know he sort of had to miss some games, you know, knee operation and things like that. But you know, obviously the club have got these newish American owners or American consortium who sort of have big ambitions. And I guess they sort of felt it, you know, felt it's time for something a bit different. And, you know, it's a club that has been in the Football League before and come down and then got close to that sort of first year down when they went to the playoffs. But they've sort of been off it a little bit the last couple of years. And you know, it'll be a job that people will fancy, much like we're also going to talk about Chesterfield as well, John Sheridan leaving it. You know, it's been a busy couple of days, I'm sure, for those managers out of work to get their CVs up to date and into these clubs.
Yeah, two very different clubs, as you say. The American owners came in at Dagenham and Redbridge, and not with a massive fanfare or a massive budget as some might have expected. And you know, it's some wonder whether Peter Taylor would be there, you know, from the outset when they took over. But he did. It's a steady pair of hands, and he's done a good job there. But as you say, that the recent free fall means that the clubs are making these changes. There's a number of changes before Christmas. Then Christmas period went quiet, and then there's clubs, you know, desperate to make sure that they don't finish in that bottom four, like Chesterfield, who again they had a big name manager in John Sheridan there, and they've got some very good players, and they're just not doing it this season.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, isn't it? I mean, we had Adam Burgo did a his sort of half-term report look at the National League every week, and he was saying, you know, the players there, you can often point fingers at managers and things, but you know, the players, they just haven't been performing for the sort of the players that are there, and frankly the money that the club are able to pay out and that sort of pulling power that they have, it's kind of, you know, almost unthinkable if they do go down, and they are in a real battle. And we've sort of seen with John Sheridan, who's been a success there before and dropped down from Carlisle to take the job on, so he kept them up last year, and you think everyone was thinking, well, this will be the year that they'll really push, and you know, could even go and win it. And it's not even look likely really from the beginning. I mean, I think it's one win in the last 12, and that's just, you know, awful form turning into the new year, and they need to be they need to start winning games and winning them quickly. And this is the thing, as the season goes on and on, you know, when you can say, well, we just need a few wins to get out of this, but when you've only won one in 12, then, you know, where are those wins suddenly gonna pop up from? And they need to get that next appointment right. Why it hasn't worked under the last two managers is kind of, you know, you have to wonder with the players, as we said, that are there and the size of the club that it is. But they've got to get this next one right. I mean, that, my opinion on who they go for, you know, clearly doesn't matter, but personally I think they should be looking at that sort of non-league experience and someone who really knows this level. Always sort of slightly cringe when we sort of say it, but because it comes across as a bit sort of, you know, non-league is completely different, but you look at the last managers who've gone up and out of this league, they all have a real understanding of the division, the level, what it takes to get out of it, and how you have to sort of plot your way through a season, and all the different players that you come across. Someone always once said to me, you know, does these sort of big managers come in if they go to Maidenhead and Maidenhead change their left back at the last minute? Do they know anything about that? You know, the guy's dropped in at left back, and you know, so there's managers in non-league who will be all over that sort of thing and really sort of do know the levels, and that could maybe sort of be the key for getting them out of it.
Yeah, and that's interesting as to where these clubs go next, because they're both big, ambitious clubs. I guess both want to get back into the Football League as quickly as they can. But you look at this season, what are they? Both played 29 league games already out of the 46 for the season. So well advanced in the season. Dagenham are 20th, just above the relegation spot. Chesterfield 22nd, slightly adrift from safety. It needs someone to come in immediately and graft some results out, doesn't it? Get some points on the board. So do they look at a short-term appointment to get them through to the end of the season and then appoint again in the summer? Or is there someone out there? We know there's plenty of managers out there, and you say already retyping up their CVs, maybe in a different font or something. I don't know how managers submit their CVs nowadays. Number of chairmen.
Do they even do CVs?
No.
I mean, they do.
I love that all the chairmen that I speak to on a regular basis, but there aren't many chairmen that actually, you know, they don't like paperwork, documents in front of them. It normally gets passed to someone else. So actually, how does a manager entice a chairman to take a punt on them? But do you think both of these clubs should be looking longer term, or should they be looking at immediately short term? Because if they drop out of the National League, we know how difficult it is to get back into that.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's just sort of getting that balance, and you want that person who can come in and have a real impact. But you know, in the case of Chesterfield, they've had quite a few managers since, you know, Paul Cook left, I think, in 2015, wasn't it? And it's sort of, you know, can you keep jumping from manager to manager, and is it gonna work? I mean, you know, it's it they've both got massive decisions, and it is because, and I guess it has got to this time now where it is that kind of stick or twist. When you see John Sheridan sort of saying after the New Year's Day games, you know, he wasn't going to resign, and he was there for the long haul, and he can understand that people, you know, what the situation was, and people wanted him to go, but as far as he was concerned, he wasn't going to go anywhere. And I guess maybe the sort of warning signs have been there when he, a couple of weeks ago, I think the chief scout came out and did the post-match press, and he sort of always wondered quite what's going on when something like that happens, because, you know, fans want to hear from their manager. But yeah, getting this next appointment, it is kind of with those two hats, isn't it? Short term to make sure we don't go down, and say for Chesterfield, that'd be unthinkable. We always seen what happens to other clubs who've gone into that National League North, which can be pretty sticky to get back out of at the best of times. And but then there's also that kind of someone who can build long term. But it's going to be it needs a quick turnaround, because otherwise they're going to be in real trouble, both of them.
Yeah, and also down the bottom there, one that made my eyebrows raise, and, you know, as I'm getting older, my eyebrows are getting thinner and thinner, so it's more difficult to raise them. But an addition to the setup at Ebbsfleet United, before Christmas we spoke to manager Kevin Watson, and he appears to have, you know, more than steadied the ship there since he came in. He's got Tristan Lewis alongside him, but this week Steve Lovell, former Gillingham boss, has come in as well as director of football. Now, I'm not sure that they may all know each other already. They may have a great working relationship already. But after so much turmoil at that club, and the club, it, certainly speaking to Kevin, it sounded that it's a much happier place at the moment. It does risk upsetting the cart again. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on directors of football?
Well, it's interesting. We actually talked, having a chat about them in the office earlier today, and I guess it's kind of this, you know, this sporting director kind of role that seems to be increasingly coming in. I mean, we've seen it at other clubs even further down sort of have this kind of role. I think they work, don't they, as long as everyone's on the same, you know, on the same bus. You know, if you're sort of in agreement with what's going on, everyone knows their roles, and they can work. But, you know, non-league football, does it, I guess it sort of really does remain to be seen how fully it does work, because, you know, if you've got a manager who wants to get a player in and the director of football don't quite think it's right, and all these sort of things, and you can miss out on people and not get the right people in, and the manager's getting the players in it doesn't want. But I guess it's all wait and see, isn't it, on the street and how it works out. As you say, Kev Watson seems to have gone in there and done steady the ship, and he sort of really spoke to him when he took over how happy he was to get this opportunity. I'm sure he's, you know, still fully pleased to be there and be doing that and trying to get them out. But it's going to be interesting to see, and I think we'll sort of start, maybe the director of football, maybe something we talk and write about more and more in the coming years, because it seems to be the way that clubs are going. Like I say, even down there's some Step 5 clubs who have seen their directors of football, which I'm not really sure about, but it'd be interesting to see how it pans out there. Absolutely.
Yeah, a discussion I had over the Christmas period, I think that the alcohol may have helped the discussion, but we talk about directors of football, and yet when we go and watch a game on a Saturday, even the manager struggles to direct anything, because it's down to the players out there, and you wonder how much control, you know, you can have as many strategies as you like, but actually it's down to the players and how they perform out on the field. And it's a director of football, rather than selection of players, I see the statement from Ebbsfleet was that Steve Lovell's going to help with his knowledge of players. And again, they're down the bottom. So actually, you know, do they need his knowledge of the Football League players? Do they actually need non-league grafters to get them out of this position? But actually, is a director of football anything more than just creating a good vibe around the club? That's the successful ones appear to be the ones that, as you say, work well with everybody within the organisation. And then you see at different levels across Europe, you get a director of football that comes in and just upsets everybody. And I'm still unsure as to how successful a director of football could ever be, particularly at non-league, because there's just so many other variables that affect mm-hmm. those players as they go out on the field. And as much as you might want a great mindset, strategy, selections, and, you know, looking at the players and how you're going to bring them in, actually, it's how they perform on a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. And that almost goes back to what we were saying about Chesterfield as well, where those players just haven't performed to the sort of the level as they are. And often there's always reasons why players don't perform, and I guess some of that comes from the manager, but you know, the manager doesn't miss the chances, does he, or give the ball away and things like that. It's kind of, I guess we in this country we're sort of quite focused on managers, aren't we, and you know, the personalities of them. You just sort of look in the Premier League and how everyone reacts, and now Mourinho's back and all this, you know, Guardiola and all that sort of thing. But it, like you say, it is the players and what they do. I guess that's what we're there for. And different people have different ideas about what a manager should be. Some people like seeing the manager pacing up and down in the technical area and shouting, and some prefer the manager to be a bit calmer. And that's always seems to be the thing, isn't it? When a team's struggling or manager's not showing enough passion, and getting someone who's going to come and shout a few things from the sideline. But you know, how much is that going to impact what actually happens on the pitch when a player's one on one? He's not really thinking about the manager. Is he, or what did he say a minute ago about doing it? You know what I mean? So it is interesting. I think directors of football is something we're still sort of getting to grips with in this country, but I can see it coming in more and more because you're seeing it higher up, and everything always filters down into non-league.
Maybe I'll start tarting up my CV and seeing if I might throw my hat in the ring for a director of football somewhere here or there.
It sounds like a good job, I think. It sounds like a nice gig sometimes, doesn't it?
It sounds like a nice leather, comfy office chair for sure.
Yeah, and I'll direct a bit of football, and if we lose, no one will ever go at me.
Yeah.
It's a bit like being editor of large at the non-league paper, actually.
Because no one wants to throw any abuse at you at all.
Yeah, I'm off Twitter these days. I don't go on there anymore.
talking about the other clubs down there, one of the clubs that will be might have an eye on the league action this weekend is AFC Fylde, because they're along with Hartlepool United representing non-league in the FA Cup third round. What sort of coverage are you going to be able to give those guys this weekend, Matt?
Lots. David Richardson is going, my esteemed colleague David Richardson, will be at Oxford United. He's going to get there early and have a Frankie and Benny's before, and he's going to be there for the Hartlepool game. I keep getting confused with who's playing who. It's the whole Dave Challoner effect of Fylde and Hartlepool, but they are playing Hartlepool on Saturday, so it'll be lots of big coverage. Hopefully Pools can go down there and fly a flag for non-league and get through. And then we've got a preview planned with Mark Yates at Fylde. Hopefully he picks up his phone this afternoon, and then there'll be sort of a nice big preview in Sunday's paper. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting, they obviously play Sheffield United on Sunday, don't they? But it's going to be an exciting weekend. I mean, I guess we've sort of been in the past used to having a few more clubs into the third round and at this sort of stage, but it's like Paul and Fylde flying the flag. So we'll be fully backing them. And now we've got a nice spot on our front page waiting for that cup upset on Saturday. If Hartlepool can do it, obviously tough task against Oxford United, but stranger things have happened in the FA Cup, as we know.
They have indeed. Anything else we can look forward to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, we've got a piece with nice piece with Jamie Collins, obviously at Sutton United. Announced his retirement, and he's talking about those days that he's going to miss, having been involved in FA Cup runs himself, scoring a penalty against Leeds that set them up with a game against Arsenal a few years ago. And he sort of mentions about the time when they beat AFC Wimbledon in that cup run, and they knew that Leeds was the prize at the end of that win. And sounds like they had a good night in the Sutton clubhouse, and he even managed to find himself a spot to have a sleep in the clubhouse after a particularly enjoyable evening. So it's those are the sort of things you're going to miss. I've also spoken to Matt Gregg, because Sutton have been on a really good run, obviously beat Woking 6-2 on New Year's Day. We've also spoken to Steve King at Dartford, who have had a good few wins in the last three games. Sort of still a bit of a work in progress, Steve's saying. He's gone in there a few games ago and they're moving in the right direction, but he's certainly not getting ahead of himself. I've also got a tribute to Chris Barker. Obviously the news came out this morning that he sadly passed away at the age of 39, former Aldershot defender, also playing about Hereford and Western Supermare as well. So we've got a tribute to Chris in the paper as well on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think the social media response to that news earlier today, it shows what a great bloke he was and how loved he was by the non-league community, whether he played for your side or played against you.
Yeah, I think that's the thing you see, seeing them, sort of this real genuine outpouring from a lot of players that played with him or were coming through when he was at clubs they were at, and how much he obviously sort of had an impact on them and helped them and offered some words of advice. And I remember speaking to him a few years ago when he had sort of caretaker spell at Aldershot, and he couldn't have been nicer person to speak to. Really enjoyed having a chat with him. You can sort of see that sort of in the messages that are coming out from players and managers and how sort of deeply upset and shocked people are at his passing.
Yeah, sad news, and our thoughts to his family and friends. Matt, thanks as ever for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading all about everything that goes on this weekend in the Non-League paper on Sunday morning. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim, and Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave for joining me.
Absolute pleasure.
Well, it's been an exciting FA Cup.
I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed the whole process through my cloudy eyes. You know, it's been gorgeous, but I've enjoyed it.
I don't think it's glaucoma, so I think it's just Guinness. Well, a thank you to all the guests as well, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, and Dave Anderson at Dave Anderson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, myself at Tim Fuel. You can, of course, also find out more about the Gaffer Tapes. There will be new episodes landing very, very soon.
Fingers crossed.
And find both of those on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Smart Speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.